There's so much to say here. And first of all, can I just say, we love touring in Poland. It is just one of our favorite places on the planet. It is, it's just, there's just so much heart and soul. And I don't know, it's just good chemistry. The three, you know, all of us, we come in and we just feel so good there. And I'm very excited to come back and share these new songs. In answer to that specific question, there are two different answers. Sometimes I'm learning songs along the way, and I work on them when I'm working in the yard. You know, I'm learning repertoire all the time. And some of them I've known absolutely forever. The songs on this record are incredibly personal to me because they've been with me through my entire life. You know, I grew up, the Beach Boys were around when I was a kid.
That was the first one I was about to ask.
I mean, I grew up, there was not a day in my life as a little girl that I didn't listen to Brian Wilson. I loved him. I loved the Beach Boys and Stevie Wonder and Burt Bacharach and Jobim. So, you know, and Serge Gainsbourg, like La Javanaise. So these songs are part of my entire life. And when I wanted to make this album called A Time for Love, which is incredibly intimate, it is deeply personal. And it was very profound to put these songs together with the two musicians with whom I've been playing the longest. You know, Jim Tomlinson and Art Hiranohara and I have been together for over 20 years. And I think that our dialogue is really spectacular. You know, we're all so different, and yet we really have shared common ground. Art Hiranohara grew up in California, Jim grew up in England, and I grew up on the East Coast. And the three of us came together, and the chemistry was just so there and present. And yet we were all so young when we started. We have really evolved and grown up together musically. And I feel so proud of how that has developed. So if I was going to make my most intimate album, they were the two musicians with whom I wanted to make the most intimate album.
I understand. It's also like with one of your best friends, you don't really have to talk a lot. It's rather when not to play, what not to say.
You're absolutely right. I love that you just said that because, you know, I don't want to use the phrase shorthand, because that sounds very glib. It's not that it's shorthand, but we understand. You hit the nail on the head.
Thank you.
We understand each other so well that we can perform in this very, let me use the word triage. You know, we can triage things out, and yet they're all there and implicit. And, you know, Kazuo Shigoro, who is our great friend and with whom we've been writing, you know, songs for a long time, gave us a great compliment the other day. He came to a show of ours. We were performing in London. He comes to see us a lot. And he came and he said, you know, this one, he said, I feel like I heard so many instruments, so many voices in just the three of you. Because, you know, so much is there between the lines. And I loved that. He's right, but it's also the harmonics, because the fewer that we are on stage, the more you hear the harmonics from the piano. I mean, that's just inevitable. Or the harmonics from the saxophone, because nothing is obliterated or sharing the space with anything else. And so it's a very, very important way of playing these songs. It was so much fun to take this Stevie Wonder song where, you know, when people saw Stevie Wonder live or recording songs in the key of life, that's not triage. I mean, how many of them are on stage? It's just crazy, right? All of his kids are on stage and everybody's on stage and it's just so exuberant. What joy to take that song and triage it and just pare it down to such something so minimal that you could sing those words and just hear nothing but the story. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted
strip
to
it.
Sing...
Yeah.
Strip it and really celebrate that aspect of it, right? Just sing the lyric and have everything else implicit. And people have been saying to me since we've been playing it live on stage, wow, I really listened to the words.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you don't listen to the Stevie Wonder words when he's singing. Of course you do, because everybody knows it and everybody sings along. So they know them. But you get to experience them in a very different way.
Absolutely.
And that's fun. I mean, that is profound joy to take a song like that and just strip it down. That is really a great privilege for me to be able to do that in this combination of just the three or four of us.
The whole perception of the song changes.
I love that you said that. Thank you so much. Because, you know, in the Venn diagram of musicians, right, Stevie Wonder's on one path and George Michael's on another and I'm on another. Mm-hmm. And we're quite, I should say George Michael was, rest in peace, love George Michael. We inhabit different genres, and yet shouldn't we just throw out the genre and say, yeah, of course we belong together in the same Venn diagram bubble sometimes. I think that George Michael, you can hear how much he loves Stevie Wonder, and it's so pure and so good. I mean, it's such a beautiful interpretation, and you can feel him just delicately holding this song that he loves so much, so tenderly in his hands. And then he passes the baton to me, because I'm here now, right? And then after me, somebody else will come. I think it's great that some songs, you don't want just that one version. Of course, Stevie is the definitive version. We totally respect that. He's an absolute genius. But I'm so grateful to him to give us a song that we can then play with, and somebody else like you, who's a lover of all of them, comes along, you're going to hear my version and George's version, and it's going to make you go back to Stevie's version and hear it even a little bit differently, inevitably, and more profoundly. You know what I mean?
Yes, because this is what art is for. The song touched you so deeply that you want to do something with it. It's like, okay, somebody wrote a book, then another person made a story about it, a film about it, then another person made a poem about it.
Well, exactly. And here's the thing. You know, I was a comparative literature major in college.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that exactly this, where we take different time periods and different languages and different national borders, right? And we start comparing what was going on in historically with what was going on in Japan, with what was going on in Spain, with what was going on in France. So suddenly you're looking at Don Quixote and Madame Bovary, right, next to each other, and you get so much more out of each book by looking at them. They're very different novels from very different writers, and yet one enriches the other, right? And so I suppose on a much more superficial level, because I mean, I'm here singing love songs. I do not compare myself to, you know, the great masters of literature, but everything feeds everything else.
Yes.
And my job is just to be an ambassador of that. Just one, which was Cliff Goldmacher, who's been writing with Jim since, well, for a bunch of years now, not as long as he's been writing with Ishiguro. Kazuo Ishiguro started writing with us in 2006 for Breakfast on the Morning Tram in 2007. Cliff came along a few years later. Both of those companions and collaborators have great chemistry, Jim and Cliff, and Jim and Ishiguro. Cliff wrote What Goodbye Is For, a beautiful lyric, which is just such a sense of longing, you know, but with that sense of hope. I love that, you know, with every goodbye, there's always a new hello. You know, you have to put something away, you have to put something down, you have to walk away, and then you get something else. And isn't that the human condition right there? We are left with all of these pangs of the heart, you know, the saudade. You're going to miss something by replacing something else. And Cliff really gets that so beautifully, and so does Jim. I mean, he composed such a great song to go with the lyric. Oh, I love it so. It's just fun for me to take that and not think about genre and not think about anything except my own simple and pure relationship to a song. I'm completely madly in love with every single song that I sing. I couldn't do it otherwise. I mean, I have to. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
You mentioned the great masters of literature, but these are, I mean, the people whose songs you chose, these are the great masters of song as well. So
exactly. Exactly. Because that is exactly what Stevie Wonder is. That is exactly what Burt Bacharach is, what Johnny Mandel is. These are the masters and the geniuses of our time, right? Who express themselves and the human condition through song. So, yeah, it's the passing of the baton of, okay, so we just mentioned mm-hmm. some 19th century literature, and you can see the timeline of life from Madame Bovary to all these masters that we're talking about, to Antonio Carlos Jobim, of course. Nobody's ever asked me this before. Ooh. You know, I am surrounded by, and so I guess I'm attracted to, people who are... I mean, we're all different. We all have the different things to bring to the table. And yet, it's a tender-hearted group. You know, these are people who love people, who love humanity, who love the community of it, who love to share, who are very generous, who are very tender, people who love to laugh. I mean, Cliff loves to laugh, and Ishiguro loves to laugh, and Jim is hilarious, and Art Hirahara, and Tom Hubbard, and sadly, we lost our drummer last year. Mm. This breaks my heart, Anthony Pinciotti, our drummer, who was so funny. We're all a good crew. We all have a lot in common. And so I guess those are the elements that are always present.
I guess this is why people come to your concert, to have a glimpse of your reality that you create with your husband and with your friends, eventually collaborators.
But I think the people who are there, who are strangers, belong in that bubble. I think the kind of people who are attracted and come to the shows share that same sensibility. So we're all on this journey together. I mean, this is what I love about Ishiguro's song, Breakfast on the Morning Tram, because it's a metaphor for exactly that. Life is full of joys and pains and the mundane and the special and all of it in one package. And we're all on this journey. You make friends and then you meet strangers who become friends and we all support each other along the way. It's about the community. And I think that we all know the world is a big place with all different kinds of music and people have different tastes. But I think everybody who's there belongs in exactly that bubble that you're talking about. So in answer to your question, what does it take? Like, it just comes so naturally. Even if we're in a big concert hall or if we're in a little club, all those people, they don't know each other. I wish they all did, because they would all fall in love with all the people who are sitting next to them or behind them or in front of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
There are tour hacks. Because we are on the road a lot and it is ungrounding, it is unsettling, you know, to go from place to place to place and town to town. So you have to unpack and you have to pack and unpack and pack again. And your head is left spinning and you have to think very hard about, you know, to make sure that, because you're tired too and you've got to focus, you've got to stay concentrated because you don't want to leave anything behind. You can't leave anything, you know, because you're going to leave the continent. You're going to leave the country. And so, yes, we have tour hacks. We have rituals. Some of them just bring us peace and peace of mind. I mean, look, Jim and I have a saying. I won't give you everything because we don't have enough time for it. But, you know, I can wrap it up by saying this. You know, Jim and I leave, and sometimes it's very hard. And we say to each other, I don't mind where I go as long as I go with you. And that is shorthand for, you know, that's the hack. We're on the road together and we bring, you know, we bring our family and our loved one and our best friend on the road.
That's the best part.
But, you know, I have a pair of slippers that I always bring and they're my comfort. And I get into the room and they're always packed at the top. So when I open my suitcase, I can take off my shoes at the door because I always take off my shoes so they're not in the room. And I slip on my slippers. And so I'm automatically comforted. Now, in order not to forget my slippers, they are in a particular bag, right? This is very mundane, but I'm going to give you this so that you understand like the bigger picture. They go into a bag that sits on the top and that stays on top of the suitcase so that I can't leave without my slippers because it would very easily be left in the bathroom or under the bed, right?
And the bag is neon orange.
Actually it's from Brazil and it's got the pattern of Brazilian sidewalks.
Okay.
So I've had it for like I don't know, 25 years, and I've never lost it, knock on wood. Then I have travel hacks for my voice. Absolutely. I do certain vocal exercises. Jim does certain flute exercises. Like, we do certain exercises that always come with us so that you start your rituals. Rituals are very, very, very important because human beings need routine. And when we're out on the road, we don't get that routine. So from slippers to vocal hacks, absolutely. So, I mean, I'll just wrap it up by saying that from the big to the small, absolutely, we have those things that make life more comfortable and also put you in the right frame of mind to be focused.
That brings me to a conclusion that we should appreciate the small mundane things. They
yes.
sometimes save us.
Yes, they are vital. They are not just small things. The mundane is, you know, I feel very grateful for my life on so many levels. But one of them is that, is the appreciation.
Lucky to be.
Yes, exactly. All I am lucky that I am able to engage in the tiniest detail that can bring me so much joy. And I don't just celebrate, we as human beings shouldn't just be celebrating, you know, the birthday or Christmas, or it can just be just a peaceful nothing of a Wednesday afternoon and life is good. It was what we toured most in 2016, 17, 18, and even into 19. Like, those 4 years were filled with orchestral concerts because it was before the orchestral record I Know I Dream and preparing for it, and then during and then after. That was a very concentrated few years of orchestral. I still do them, but not as often. It's very special. It's spectacular sonically. What I'm excited about is the two concerts we're doing in Gdynia on the 24th and the 26th. One is quartet, so it couldn't get more intimate than that. And one is orchestral, so we're sweepingly large, but it's also very intimate. I encourage fans to come to both because the repertoire will be completely different. The sound will be completely different and the vibe will be completely different. What's at the center is, you know, me and us and my small band, but it's a completely different experience in the same week. And when we do these concerts, like we've done them in Belgium, in various countries, we're back to back. We've done the small band and the orchestral. And fans just love that they get those two experiences in 1 week because you just get such a completely different experience. So I'm thrilled that this festival has put us on like this back to back. And I can't wait to see people there.